Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And the schedule is, I said there's no set schedule, it's whenever I finish the book. I finished this a while ago.
Of course.
And this has happened. It feels like always like a week behind. But there's a special reason for it this time is that I finished the book Dune by Frank Herbert.
Yes.
In various ways. It's called Book One of the Dune series or Dune Saga number one. And I thought, well, I reread it again because the last Dune movie was out. Dune Part Two.
Yes.
Directed by, is it Denis Villeneuve, etc.
Yeah.
With Timothy Chalamet and
Zendaya
and the rest, everyone else. I mean, there's like one of every actor in there. It feels like there's so many people in that movie. Yeah. Anyway, so and I thought, well, we'll rewatch the first movie, rewatch the second movie after I read the book, and so then we can wrap it all up. That was the idea. I thought we can talk about the movie and the book. It turns
like
out
we do.
We did this already for the first movie. I look back through the episode list and we talked about Dune, the Dune movie, Dune 2021, the movie.
We did
an episode about that 3 years ago.
Yes.
I'd forgotten that we'd already talked about half of the movie experience.
Well, the most important thing was that the second movie just came out.
And here's the thing that I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Is that the novel that I read, it's definitely a story. It's the complete story. It is the story of, you know, space desert Hitler rising to power, taking over the planet, and then goes on to become, you know, like a Caesar, like conquering the rest of it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like starts off as like, oh, it's a hero's tale. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit, I don't know, Lawrence of Arabia. It's a bit this, it's a bit, you know, all the different kind of stuff where the white man turns up, becomes their messiah and goes off. And it goes, and it's very much a cautionary tale of that. And it shows that very much in the movie. And I was like, all right, and that's it. And it wraps up, and you're like, great. And now we're going on and do it. We're going to do the jihad. We're going to go and do the, you know, the hordes rampaging across the rest of the galaxy.
Mm.
But the movie, the second Dune movie, Dune Part Two, definitely doesn't feel like the end of the story because when Frank Herbert wrote the book, he was sort of like, right, finish the book. That was the story. That's the complete story.
When did he actually do that?
1965. Now, he had other parts. He had, because it was like, you know, he'd published it in bits and pieces and dribs and drabs, and there were short stories and stuff collected together.
Okay.
Which is still kind of the remnants of, or like the layers of that is still possible to see in the book, because it's like part one, Dune, part two, Arrakis, part three, Mordib or whatever. Oh, no. Yeah. Part two, Mordib, part three, The Prophet. And so it's kind of separated out into three different sections there.
Yes.
But then we've got to the end of the movie and you're like, oh, that's the middle movie in a trilogy of movies.
It really feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Because they're like, oh, we know what comes next. We've got Dune Messiah. We're like, we've got the next book. And, you know, it says Dune Messiah. This is the blurb of the book. Dune Messiah continues the story of Paul Atreides, better known and feared as the man christened Mordib. As emperor of the known universe, he possesses more power than a single man was ever meant to wield. You know, it's very clear straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Worshipped as a religious icon by the fanatical Fremen, Paul faces the enmity of the political houses he displaced when he assumed the throne and a conspiracy conducted within his own sphere of influence. So you're like, all right, so it's there already. And so, yeah, carry on.
So, but this was this next, like, of course, you said the Dune book itself was published in like installments. Did Frank Herbert also publish that book?
Well, yeah, like he wrote all the six books. There's six Dune books, which
are his
original books.
Okay.
There was meant to be seven, but I think he died and then his son finished it off and things like that.
Oh, okay. But because I do know that there was some involvement from his son, but that doesn't start
Brian
until
Herbert.
The very last
no,
book.
No, it's not until the very last one.
Okay.
So here, my point is that the people who are making the movies already know what they should be setting up for the next movie. And apparently, just recently, like since I started this plan, it's been confirmed that June Part 3 is coming out.
Yes.
And now I wish I hadn't have planned this episode until June Part 3 came out. Like, we did buy them, so we can rewatch, like, when June Part 3 comes out, we can rewatch June Part 1 and then rewatch June Part 2 and then watch Dune Messiah, which is, like, hopefully wrapping up.
Yes.
Hopefully, we're going to, like, get to the end of this story.
Yes. So, I want to say something in between here. It feels a bit
Yeah.
Like what they did with The Hobbit. Because The Hobbit, the book.
No, it really isn't. Oh, no, it really isn't.
Oh, it really
Here's
does feel like
the
that
Hobbit
to me.
Is a very short children's book.
Exactly.
With not exactly. It completely different from Dune and
yes.
Dune Messiah, which are not children's books.
Absolutely. That is not what I'm comparing it to.
Okay.
I'm comparing the book and movie section here. Okay.
Yeah.
So The Hobbit, the book,
right.
is a story, right? Not very complex. And then they brought out the movie.
No.
And it
Again,
me...
I have to disagree. You said what you're saying. I'm disagreeing with you very much so. The Hobbit movies, they had to pad out to make three movies. Dune, they have to cut a lot to fit it down into even two movies or three movies.
Okay. However, and now
right.
I want to actually
yeah,
get to
okay.
my point. So the Hobbit movies, they
yeah.
had to pad out with stuff that wasn't actually in the book.
Yeah.
And in the Dune,
yeah.
like if you think of Dune, the book... You have certain things in your head that happens.
Right.
And then you think, oh, if they bring out Dune, the movie.
Right.
At first I thought, okay, it's one movie. And then suddenly it was, oh, it's two movies. And
yeah.
now you think, ah, but wait, it's actually three movies now. Where they're now in opposition to The Hobbit are taking
yeah.
the next follow-up
yeah.
book and add that.
Yeah,
I think
I see this as the opposite example. So if you can say it's like The Hobbit, it isn't. It's
okay.
the opposite example of The Hobbit.
Right.
The Hobbit should have been a movie.
Yes.
It could have maybe been spread out into two movies, and that's what it originally was.
But maximum.
Maximum at the far end, and then they spread out into three movies
yes.
for reasons which I still don't understand, having watched all three movies. And it's terrible because they're having to drag up as much as possible. Anyway, let's get away from The Hobbit, because
yeah.
we only have that on your brain because we're two-thirds of the way through
True.
Our Lord of the Rings
True.
Trilogy extended edition rewatch.
But I want to add another fear of mine.
Oh yeah, what's that?
Like, who tells us that they're going to finish, that they're going to end with the next Dune book edition into like the
well I think
you know who
I like think at that could, point it should it just become just a TV series
it, yeah it could just go on it could become a
well,
franchise
yeah well it is, I think the three movies I think at the end of Dune Messiah again having read Dune Messiah and read these all of these six books
okay.
and even the next one after that the what's it called Hunters of Dune book 7
mm-hmm.
Is the concluding volume of the you know the this thing by Brian Herbert. That was one of the very earliest episodes of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast.
Oh,
it
what was
the
it?
First. Yeah, yeah. Let me actually look it up here. I think if I just go like
the
this.
The seventh Dune book.
Yeah, it was right at the start. Episode 10. And
oh.
I was actually sent it for free. 10 episodes into the Science Fiction Book Review podcast, I was already getting book offers.
Nice.
And the publisher sent me Hunters of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it and I gave it 0.5 stars.
Oops.
It was so bad that I made a decision. I'm never accepting any books from any publishers or publicists or authors ever again. And sometimes I have,
right.
but again, for the amount of emails that I get offering me to read books, I was like, no,
yeah.
I couldn't. And then I immediately read Dune Saga Part 1, gave it 4.5 stars. And
okay,
that was...
Look, I have now a question.
Yeah.
When you reviewed the seventh book
yeah.
of the Dune Saga books, how many did you read of the others did you read beforehand?
All of them. I'd already read all of them.
You read all of them
yeah.
before, and then you decided to start again.
No, I didn't start again. I read the seventh book.
Yes, and then you just said...
No, I didn't start... No, here's the thing. And again, I haven't even got past the introduction part of this talk because we keep getting sidetracked into the movie. I didn't want this to be about the movie, but okay, here we go. The first Dune book, if you enjoy reading it, really, really enjoy reading it, you can either stop or you can carry on.
Yeah.
What you should do is read the second book and only carry on if you really, 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 really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't really, really like it, stop there and you've got a good experience. And then if you start reading the third book and you get to the end and you really, really like it, carry on. But at the end of every book, that it's a jumping out point.
Okay.
Of the Dune series, of the Dune saga, the first six books.
Right.
You have to be really, really into it or going, I'm definitely getting through to the end, no matter what, to get through those six books, because there is diminishing returns at every single novel.
Okay. My point why I was asking that was
yeah.
that before you started the SFBRP,
yeah.
you read all the six
I had already
Dune
read them once all the way through.
And then for the SFBRP episode,
yeah,
you read the seventh book then for the first time.
Yes, because it had just come out and the publisher sent it to me. It was
okay.
A new book.
Okay, now I understand. And then the SFBRP list goes on, and then you have a few more.
But don't keep reading. let's have a look. Hunters of Dune came out in 2006. Yeah, and I started the SFBRP in 2008. You know, so that was pretty early on. So. It's obviously being sent. Anyway, my point being is that this was going to be the wrap up of like the Dune movies. Let's watch the Dune movies, and this can be the episode where we fully talk about the Dune movies and all. But it didn't feel like the end of the movie,
because it isn't.
It really isn't. And I was like, oh right, we still got at least one, maybe two more movies with these characters before we get on to like the next generation, Dune, the next generation.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, what can I talk about? And I realized what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the differences between the book and the movie, but we last talked about Dune, just the novel, in 2016. So it turns out we've done, this will be now the fourth or fifth episode just on the first book of Dune.
Yes,
and you were like, how many more do we have to do? And I was like, look, the movie came out, I reread it, I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. I've already skipped a few science fiction novels that I read this year because I was like, what else do I have to say about The Time Machine? It's a short book, you know, talked about it before. But I think, there's still some more interesting stuff to say about Dune, the novel.
Okay.
Because we were talking this year about, there was that thing that we did right at the beginning of November where I was like, hey, let's talk about Starship Troopers now because we want to talk about the rise of fascism and all that kind of stuff. And is this book a fascist book? And, and because of politics in America, you're all like, oh, what's this going on here as well? And, when you actually then watch the movie Dune, that it's a lot more in that kind of thing is a lot more in focus.
Yes.
So we did an episode where we talked about the previous movie, like the 1980s movie.
Oh, the Jodorowsky.
No, not the Jodorowsky. No. Jodorowsky's Dune is just a documentary about a movie that wasn't made.
Okay.
It was the other one. Who was it made by? The thingy.
Okay.
Thingy made a movie. Name's gone from my head right now. I was like, Stanley Kubrick. It's like, no, not Stanley Kubrick. Hey, a Stanley Kubrick Dune would be pretty good. not Stanley Kubrick. Other guy. Either way, don't need to worry about it. But also we talked about the board game. Now, here's the thing about the board game is I've only played it like twice. The Dune board game.
Okay.
It's a legendary board game that came out and then was out of print for ages. So it was difficult to play. Not many people could play it.
Right.
But I played it, and it's one of those, it's an asynchronous kind of game. In other words, like in chess, it's completely synchronous, except one person gets to go first, like white gets to go first.
Mm-hmm.
So in the big tournaments, you play white and then black and then white and then black, And the same with poker,
It's like turn-taking.
Yeah, it's turn-taking, but it's not turn-taking. It's that white has an advantage from going first.
Yes.
But that's a really small advantage. If you're playing poker, everybody gets to go first. It goes around the table.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you have the small blind, the large blind. It means you have to put money in. You can't just sit it out. You've got to start putting money in. So the more asynchronous a game is, it's kind of like more complex to balance.
Mm-hmm.
And in Dune, it's completely asynchronous because everyone goes around and takes turns, but each player takes on a different faction in Dune. Mm-hmm. So one player is the Emperor, another player is the Spacer Guild. So one is the Harkonnens.
Yeah.
Another player is the Fremen, and another player is the Bene Gesserit,
Right.
And you're like, well, how does that work? It's like, well, each one of them has a like superpower.
Yeah.
Each one of the factions has something that feels like, you go, well, that's not fair. Like the Spacer Guild, they can see everything that's happening across the whole planet because they're in space. Mm-hmm. And when they put soldiers down, they don't have to pay to transport the soldiers there. So they get free soldier placement, work up a soldier placement on the planet of Arrakis.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else who brings soldiers to Arrakis has to pay the Spacer Guild player
that makes sense.
To do it.
Yes.
And you're like, well, that's not fair. How do they do it? And sort of like, all right, and over here we've got the, whatever this house is over here, and they have atomic bombs. And you're like, wait, is that right? It's like, yep, it's in the book, it's in the movie, the house atomics. You're like, so what? They can just like wipe out armies left and right really easily and you don't have to pay for it. Like, yep, no problem at all.
Yeah.
And the emperor's like, Sardaukar, I can just have as many soldiers as I want. Like, I don't need to do that. And the Bene Gesserits are like, oh, we can just, like, control, you know. Mm. So all the stuff that's happening in the book, every player has one of these powers which nobody else has access to.
Okay.
And what I really noticed in now this time listening back through the book, like, I listened to the audio book of the book, I actually got it as from the library. I was like, oh, I'll get it as a library book and listen to it as an audiobook. And I got all the way through. I was getting quite a way through. And then it's like, oh, I've got to finish it up. I don't have it. And then I just checked in my Audible library. Turns out I've already bought it or not. I already had it. I'd already spent a credit on it years ago. So I was like, oh, I'll just download it on Audible and finish listening to it on there.
Yeah.
And then also watching this movie, mm-hmm. I was like, ah, what's really clear is Paul becomes, you know, super desert Jesus, yeah. And also still the you know, the, what is he, the it's not the Earl, is it the Earl? No, what is it? There's the Count Harkonnen bit, then he's, yeah. The Baron, is it the Baron? No, Baron,
no,
Harkonnen,
Baron Harkonnen,
and he, the Earl,
Lord
no. whichever one the Atreides is, he, yeah. becomes the head of that. Is it Earl or whatever it is? So
no, it's another,
yeah, another royal, like, you know, noble title.
But it's not Lord.
No, it's not. No. Either way. Yeah. But he, in the end, does this. And also his grandfather, again.
Duke.
Yes, that's it. Duke Atreides. So he's also a duke.
Yeah.
He becomes a Fremen. He becomes a Fremen leader. Mm-hmm. He is also the Kwisatz Haderach.
Yes.
He's the first male Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
He also drinks the whiskey. No, the worm, spice. The spice. Yeah, the worm. That's it.
Blood.
The worm juice. The worm piss, as they say in the movie. And he becomes a reverend mother. He has reverend mother powers. Bene Gesserit powers. He's got Harkonnen, the calculating nasty side of the Harkonnens.
Yeah.
He's got the Atreides side. He's, yeah. got the atomics of the Atreides. He holds the spacing guild at random, yeah. like that kind of stuff. He marries the emperor's daughter to become all, yep. of that kind of stuff. He is also a Fremen. He's a battle leader. He's trained by, like,
Fremen, you already said.
Yeah. Well, no, I said he can ride worms like the Fremen. I said he's also like the reverend mother, like the, so he's got all the, yeah. powers of those kind of things. He's one of the elders.
He's a bit too omnipotent, isn't he?
Well, yes, and all of this is combined into, and it's very clear in the book. Well, it's not very clear. This is just how it says in the book. They said, we need to tell you that we've also been training you up until the age of 15. That you're also a mentat. In other words, you're a human calculating, mm-hmm. machine. And he says, oh no, I can't be a human calculating machine because you have to be trained from birth to become a human calculating machine. And then he's like, and also you can't tell them that they're a human calculating machine training because that'll, and these are like, oh, like he suddenly recognizes, oh, I have been trained. So he's a mentat. He's an Atreides warrior, you know, being taught by, you know, Gurney Halleck and what's the other guy? I should bring up, I actually have the character list here as well. Yeah. Duncan Idaho, Gurney Halleck and, yeah, those guys have been training him.
Yes.
He's been taught.
And he's the Duke just because he has got the ring.
Yeah, yeah, he's got
stuff.
The training there. So it's like he is one of everything.
Yeah.
And it was really, really clear to me, sort of like, oh, nobody stood a chance. Like, he's literally the most overpowered person because he's been trained, he's been bred, he's been bred in other ways, he's been, yeah. trained in other ways.
Yeah.
He's really good at reading and he knows about how to walk in the desert by reading Wikipedia, or whatever they say in the book, isn't it? See, he starts like mansplaining. Explaining it to his desert girlfriend, doesn't,
yeah.
he? He's sort of like, oh, I heard about this. I read somewhere, and she's like, yeah, you read it. All right, stop, yeah. mansplaining. Let me just show you what to do here.
Yes,
and it's, but here's the thing: in the movie, they leave out that he's also a trained mentat.
Mm.
And in the movie, they kind of write out the other mentat. What's his name? Thurfur Howard. He's,
yeah. He disappears pretty fast.
Is it? No. Which one is the? Yeah, Howard is the mentat and master of assassins to House Atreides. In the book, which would be like in the movie part two, he goes over and is employed by the Harkonnens. Mm. Baron Harkonnen employs him.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually works with the Harkonnen's nephew, Feod Rautha, to, like, you know, remember that scene in the Colosseum,
yeah.
the Triangular Colosseum?
Yeah.
That's all a thing by, you know, that's all a plot by Thurfur Howard in the book, but they kind of write him out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? That's actually a good thing to write out. I think it would be too complicated with everything else in the movie to also say that that Paul Atreides, Mordib, you know, whatever his name, you know, Usul, whatever his name is, it's just, it's too much. Like, how many names has he got? Yeah. He's you know, he's the,
He's too much.
And it would actually be too much in the movie. You're being like, well, no, how can he be everything? How can he be literally everything to everyone?
Yeah. Yeah. I have one question.
Yeah, go for it.
And now this is maybe a bit difficult because you have to think back so long ago. When you read this book for the first time.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to realize that the book is kind of manipulating you in the beginning to feel like empathy with Paul and his mother and the whole like, oh, he feels like, oh, he's like, he's becomes a refugee and we need to like root for him to survive. When was the point that you dawned?
Things I don't know because I read this first book when I was really young and it starts up and you're like, yay, an adventurer. Like I'm 15 and I'm reading Dune and Paul is 15 and he grows up and he's like meeting the girl and he's being the hero. No, it is. It's literally until you get to the end and you're like, wait, so, and even then I was like, oh, this isn't an, like, I, you know, I was expecting like a boy's own adventure story, but you're like, oh no, this is showing, it's like a deconstruct, it's the deconstruction of the white messiah, you know, Lawrence of Arabia style thing, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly what Avatar did, where they're like, oh, here's the people over here.
Yeah.
How does this guy come in and suddenly become, you know, how does this guy, Jake or whatever his name, come in as a white American guy? He just comes in and wins, saves everyone, becomes their leader and becomes their messiah.
Yeah.
And this book is saying, ah, no, that doesn't happen by accident.
Mm.
Like, the Bene Gesserit have been here for generations planning rumors, and this is made super clear in the movie where the young people are like, nah, look, it's a Bene Gesserit, like, we know this, the Bene Gesserit have been around, it's great that we've got like this, you know, our reverend mothers are really powerful and things like that, but we all know these prophecies, they're just planted among us. Like in the movie they have to make it a lot more explicit that the young people are like, nah, we see through this,
and with the north and the south people
which again, that's an addition to the movie which I think is a really fun one, that there's a power base in the south, and in the book it's actually flipped the other way around. The warriors stay in the north and they send all the women and children to the south. The other thing that's flipped around is that in the book the young people are the young men are the ones who are the most followers. They're the fanatic followers, and actually the older people are the ones who are more weary of Paul. But I really liked in the movie how they switch it round, and you get what's his name? Oh, I should just bring it up here. I've got the main guys here. Javier Bardem is Stilgar. Now, in the first movie, he comes along, and I was like, I'm not sure about Javier Bardem as Stilgar. He seems a bit like jokey about it, but it works so well that he actually becomes the comic relief. Well, not even the comic relief, but like it's played a lot more for laughs to say like, it's the prophecy. He's doing the prophecy. He's like, yeah, but it's not really. But he denies he's the prophet, and he says, but of course he denies he's a prophet. The prophecy says the prophet is going to deny that he's the prophet, and it's all playing with that, and the young people are talking against that. So, I just think it's like the first time I read it, it was only at the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think I remember going almost straight into Dune Messiah and going, oh, right. So this is how, you know, like the cautionary tale, or not even a cautionary tale. It's because it's so, I don't know. It's weird that this is from the 1960s, and that after the 1960s, we can still have an Avatar, which is still playing it straight. And these movies bring it out so much more. The book is way more subtle. It's doing a lot more. It's playing things a lot more subtle. For example, in the book, I didn't realize this episode is just me comparing the books and the movies.
Of course.
In the book, it's sort of like when he gets up in front of everyone near the end of the book, like his final thing, he stands up and says, I am Duke Atreides. The Emperor gave me this planet. So you can call me Mordib, but at the highest levels of politics, I'm actually the one who was given this planet. Now I'm going to take it back. In the book, that is just a speech. It feels very much like a triumphant speech. It feels very much like, and you're reading the book. And even this time I was like, Yeah, that's right. He was given the planet. Yeah, he should. Yeah, it should be. He should take the planet. Yeah, you know. And it's a lot more subtle in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That all of these things, it's like a creeping thing. But by the end of the book, everything, you know, everything comes together. They use the atomics on the shield wall. The wind comes in, knocks down the tent, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
And in the movie, it's played like a lot of it is played a lot more straight to the intentions of the book rather than the like to the subtext of the book. The movie brings out the subtext of the book a lot earlier and a lot clearer than the book does.
Because it needs to continue with the second book. Like there needs to be a continuation.
Like into the Dune in the Messiah.
Movies. Yeah, yeah. So I feel it had to do that. It had to ramp up a bit faster of showing and projecting what's happening with this construct. That it isn't like that it was manipulating you into, you know, it's all very...
I think that was even there in the first movie. In the first movie, there was that scene where they flash forward, where he's sort of like, to be honest, I think there was like,
where they had this talk, where they had the talk with the father about what is necessary to do. Sometimes
it's like a dream. It's like a dream sequence.
Oh, was it a dream sequence?
Where you flash forward, and then there's like this, there's this superhero fight in it, and the visor flips up, and it's him. And I was like, oh, so he's like a really cool fighter in the movie. He's like, he becomes a Marvel hero, and then it flicks up, and he's like, oh no, it's a Marvel villain. And I was like, and it's kind of disappointing in the first movie, but I understood that they had to put that in there to make sure that when people go and see movie part two, that they're not like, wait, so Paul Atreides is the bad guy?
Yeah, and also then they did foreshadow that with this conversation, and I remember that, you know, when they talk about how sometimes you have to do atrocious things for the
what's
greater
the price you pay?
Yes.
Well, that's in the book as well. But I'm just saying that in the novel, when they get to the end. It's sort of like, and Shani will be my true love, you know, and she's going to be great. And also in the book, it's a lot longer. That whole thing doesn't just happen a few months later while the pregnancy is still there.
Yeah.
She's already born and is a 2-year-old child, and then Paul has already got two children as well by the time the book ends. And in the movie, I totally understand why they're like, no, we can't do that. Like, let's have the creepy baby still inside Jessica and it be really creepy. And then she gets like the face tattoos and she's really creepy.
Yes.
And at the end she's like mind melding with the Reverend Mother, saying, I'm the Reverend Mother now, and you're like, holy shit, like all of these traitors are bad news. And you're like, oh yeah, because she's the daughter of the like, it's actually the family that we thought we were following. We thought we were following the Atreides family, but actually we were following the Harkonnen family, which is it's again, the movie makes it all a lot clearer and then has to have someone who is the conscience of the book or of the story, which is Shani in the movie.
Yes.
Whereas in the book, we're so much more in the minds of everyone, because in the book, it's sort of like everybody becomes a viewpoint character. Mm-hmm. You just skip around and this person's thinking that, I think that, I think that. And then the next paragraph, it skips to someone else like, well, I think this, I think so. The book is a lot more subtle about it that you get to see.
But you can't do that in the movie.
No, you can't do it in the movie. Like even if there's a few times when there's a voiceover in the movies that you're sort of like wincing a bit because it makes you think of the previous movie, and I need to just quickly look up what the first movie was. David Lynch, there we go.
David Lynch begins.
Okay. David, and the other thing about the movie is that it's not just another adaptation of the book. I might have mentioned this when we talked about the first movie. It's also a remake of the David Lynch movie. Like a lot of the styling, a lot of the editing choices, a lot of the story beats, which they did for the first movie, those are repeated again.
Yeah.
You know, in the book, they're like, hey, we're on Caladan or whatever it is. And everything's really nice. In the book, they're like, all right, we're now exploring the palace where we live on Dune. And I'm like, wait, so we don't get a space trip? We don't get to see what the spaceships look like? Nope. In Dune, in the novel? Nope. They're there, and then they're just over there. And you're like, well, that was an easy journey.
Yep.
Duncan Idaho's around here somewhere. He arrived 3 weeks ago. And that's just it. In the book, all of that skipped over. It was both of the movies were like, well, we've got to show what the Spacing Guild does. We've got to show these bits and pieces and those bits and pieces. So, it's a real interesting to see that the movie is doing a lot with what our preconceptions of the previous movie, which was a lot more triumphant. You know, when Paul comes in the David Lynch movie and rides the worms in, we're like, yay, let's go. Woo-hoo, you won. And in this movie, we're like, don't like this guy anymore.
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet is No, just doing a good job of like going from character to character.
Yeah, yeah. The progression of the character is very well done.
Yeah.
Very well done.
And so I think that combined the two of them, I think the recent Dune movie part one and two is doing a lot more with the subtext of the book and putting aside some stuff from the actual book where we're like, actually, we don't need to do that. We don't need to have Shani already pregnant and then at the end of the book, her kid's dying. So Paul is really upset that he's lost his two children. Mm. Like, we'll have her up with the soldiers. So she's not, she comes with them, you know, so she's involved a bit more at the end.
It feels in the movie, she feels way more feminist than I ever got the impression in the books.
No,
in the movie,
yes,
they portray her as somebody like very progressive.
Well, here's the thing. In the book, the way that they show that everybody's equal is that even the children run around the battlefield after the battle and kill all the injured soldiers. And also, if one of theirs is injured, they just kill those as well and do that. So in the book, it's like everyone's equal. We're all evil?
Everybody has
like
the
we're
same
all
duties.
Like killers, like we're all like child soldiers. Of course, that's the whole point of the Fremen is like the Fremen, they're all the heroes. You're like, wow, this is a lot more like child soldiers. This is a lot more like Sparta, you know, the 300 thing where they're like, hey, all these, you know, it's really great to be a warrior. It's like, you were trained from like 5 years old to be that warrior. You're all child soldiers is actually what you are.
Sorry, a bit side-hand. Yeah. Do you think that had something to do with Vietnam War influences to the
book? No, because that's kind of like too almost
too
early for this. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, influences on the novel, the original novel, are much more of these legendary things, you know, like and also like Lawrence of Arabia,
right?
Which have you watched the movie? There's a book as well.
Epic, and I'm not the kind of.
It's very good. It's a very good movie.
Yeah,
it's a long movie.
Okay,
if you think these Lord of the Rings movies
are
long,
watching the third movie, it's 4 hours.
4 hours. Yeah. It's 4 hours.
Lawrence
of Arabia. I don't know. I'm not going to Google it now.
Okay.
Anyway, you watch it in two parts. There's like they're literally
makes
like
sense.
Intermission, and you're like, great, and you just you know listen to some music for 10 minutes or something while the intermission's on. No, what I'm saying is that the Dune book is based on more mythic stuff and legends and like where does this come from? Where does that come from? Mm-hmm. You know, the drug use is from him taking mushrooms, so that's some 1960s stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But other stuff is sort of like, I don't know, I've read through Wikipedia page, I'd have to look, but like, you know, when they're talking about the battle languages, they're like, oh, that's from these, you know, Cossacks, and these are from
you know,
so they're taking the different languages from different places, you know what I mean, like the Caladans are the Caledonians, so we're like, you think, oh yeah, we play bagpipes and things.
This is why, because why he's called Ivanhoe.
What's that? Ivanhoe?
No, isn't it, what's the trainer guy, Paul's friend, a trainer?
Gurney Halleck.
No, the other guy.
Duncan Idaho.
Duncan, come on.
Duncan is a good... Yes, but this is all names from in the past. You know, when they're talking about how there's no computers, it's because there was an uprising against the AI overlords.
Oh.
And the AI overlords literally took all of their names from, like, even more legendary things.
Oh,
so, like,
right,
one of them
course.
Is called, you know, Agamemnon and, you know, all those kind of things.
Yes.
Which goes into it in the more of the... Brian Herbert, Kevin J. Anderson books, which I have read a surprising amount, actually.
Oh, okay.
Of those. There's some other series. The Prelude to Dune, the other
this is
ones
all part of the Dune universe.
There's a huge Dune universe there.
Okay.
Again, there's only so many books in the other one.
Goes on and on.
Yeah. There's, because there's lots of different things. But yeah, there's the... there's a different set. I mean, I could probably look at it by clicking on Brian Herbert's name, because of course all of these books would be from him. Yeah, the Butlerian Jihad. I've read all of the Butlerian Jihad. I've read the Prelude to Dune, which is House Atreides, House Harkonnen, and House Carino. Carino is the Emperor's house. You know, Red Hunters of Dune, and I think that's it actually. So yeah, I've read the Butlerian Jihad, which is three books, which are set like 10,000 years before Dune is happening, with the Machine Uprising. It's not very good.
Right. No, yeah, but I'm impressed by, like, I only know Dune.
It used to be that I would just go to the bookshop and buy whatever the next book was.
I
so
know,
in 2002,
Dune,
the Bertlevi and Jihad books came out and I read all of them.
Dune, the weirdly abridged version, and then
then
movies.
Yeah. So the point that I'm getting to here is that the book is, I think, almost too subtle.
Mm.
It isn't too subtle, but it's almost too subtle. And that's what I think makes it so great, is that it leaves it up to you to do all the work. So if you read it when you're only 15, you're only getting so much out of it.
Yes.
And then you read it when you're 25 and you get another amount out of it. And then you read it when you're 35 and then read it again when you're 45. I'm 44 now. But, you know, you can it's a book that you can read every 10 years and get different amounts of things out of it.
Yeah. That's pretty good for one novel to last you literally a lifetime.
And that's why it's in the SFBRP Masterworks list. Mm. And that's why the biggest movies they're making it into some of the biggest movies. Again, it's probably not going to stand, the movies probably aren't going to stand the test of time.
Yeah.
But in another 40 years, they'll make another round of Dune movies and Timothy Chalamet will come in and play the Emperor or something. They'll do some stunt casting.
Yeah.
And everyone would be like, oh yeah, he was he was younger.
Ooh, clever, yeah. I like that. It's really interesting though how life experience and how you going along in your own life and just living and knowing more about people and how people are, humans in general, changes how the impression on the things you get out of one book. I find that very, very, very interesting. I don't think there are that many books like that out there.
I think the books that are like that are the ones that stand the test of time.
Yeah.
Because even if you, in the end, go, oh, this is, you know, the politics in this book is remarkably racist. You're like, yes, but what, like, and then same with The Lord of the Rings, which I'm sure we can get onto when we do our discussion when we finish up the movies.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, ah, yes, these books are quite racist.
Yeah.
However, the Odyssey was probably very racist to a lot of the people that they were, depicting. Mm. But it transcends the racism of, like, you know, once a book or once a world gets big enough where you have to portray different cultures and different nations, it's almost impossible for anyone at any point to write a world that's really, really context, drawing on the myths and the culture and even the looks of places without it coming off as, like, you know,
stereotypical
or like anything that's bad about this kind of thing. Like, I was actually really relieved when we were just watching that Lord of the Rings where some of the Eastern people come in, or no, the people who were like went over to Mordor's side, you know, went over to Sauron's side, and I was like, oh no, these are going to be, you know, Asian people or black people. And no, they weren't, they're just all white skinned. And I was like, oh, thank goodness that there's like literally like hardly anybody of color or anybody who isn't just white, of course, because they just got loads of New Zealand actors there, or, you know, wherever they were from, and you just like pick them out. I was like, oh, and it was like one of those moments of relief that I've been like, oh, it would have been so easy that if all of the evil people, we could have just done, you know, some Yellow Peril or Red Menace or whatever it would have been, or just, and they would have just been like if all of the bad people have been represented by a specific, you know, nationality or race, it would have been like, it would have been even more wince inducing. And in the end, you're like, oh, right, yeah, I guess dwarves are Scottish, right? Okay, that's fine. You know, there's a certain thing you can go with some of this stuff. You know what I mean?
And
I think that there's the movie is it's bumping right up against sort of like, all right, you're using the word jihad and lots of people in the desert with, you know, with this kind of stuff, and you're like, well, is this racist? It's sort of like, well, it's if D.H. Lawrence and, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, is that racist? And it's sort of like, kind of, but also the deserts is where the messiahs come from.
And the storytelling kind of, the storytelling sits on top of the racist, because racism, because it is told, it always depends on by
who's telling
this?
And just as we as you go through like the casting of the let's go into the movie.
June. Yeah.
Yeah. They had to kind of invent this naked, no head, like ultra white person, ghostly white. You know, they look like the Witness Me. Who is it? The petrol heads. No, what do they call them? The gas boys or whatever they're called in the Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
They had to create a look to make sure that the obviously evil nation needed to be like not representing any specific thing except, of course, like fascist skinheads, you know.
Yeah.
And they sort of, so they like they had to create that from scratch.
Yeah.
So to make sure that they're not like, oh, the evil people are the, you know, .. whatever.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah. Also, it needed to be very obvious. They needed to have something very obvious, so that the subtlety and the manipulation.
Well, here's the thing: in the book, that's actually more subtle. Mm. That they actually have some characters visit the planet Harkonnen, and it's like, well, this is terrible, and everyone here is really oppressed, and everyone is really miserable.
Yes.
And in the movie, we didn't see all the really miserable people; we just saw the really like fanatic, you know, people in the Colosseum.
Yeah.
We didn't actually see what life was like for the people there.
Yeah.
Obviously,
but you could see some glimpses, but
So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's like this balance of what you need to do to make the movie more subtle the movie is more subtle than the book in ways because you don't get to see inside everybody's head, but then it's less subtle in other ways. The thing that I found interesting is when the movie, the first June part one comes up.
Yeah.
The first voiceover is by Zendaya playing Shani, a young rebellious Fremen warrior who is Paul's love interest. And she's the one who opens it in the David Lynch movie. It's the Emperor's daughter.
Yes.
Who is there, who is played by...
Right.
In this one,
the very last
Florence Pugh,
yes,
is Princess Ur-Ulan, the Emperor's eldest daughter, heiress presumptive, and the Bene Gesserit initiate. So in the book, she gets all of the little chapter headings. Mm-hmm. So you know that there's a chapter title, and then
the Emperor's daughter.
Yeah, she's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And actually said right at the end of the book, sort of like, oh, we're going to marry her. Oh, she's got presumptions of being an author. And you're like, yeah, I've been reading her snippets of her work all this time.
Yeah.
And so in the movie, the she gets the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first June Part One movie by Denis Villeneuve, it's Shani who gets it. I'm like, oh, that's great, because it's the Paul's other love interest who's actually the love interest. She gets to open and close that movie. But then in the second movie, Princess Ur-Ulan gets to open it. I'm like, oh, right, just like the book and like the previous movie. This is now her, like, even though she's more of a minor character in this book.
In
the book, she's not a character at all.
Yeah, exactly.
But she is a character because we get to see things from her point of view.
Yeah.
There's the snippets of like, here's a bit from my book in my father's house, and it talks about what it's like to grow up as a princess and what, you know, her father was like. Here is like Arrakis Rising or Dune, you know, that Paul. And so we see lots of stuff from her point of view, but she's not a character
She doesn't appear.
Only right at the very end where Paul's like, her, I'm marrying her, right? It was quite interesting. And Florence Pugh is an amazing actress and probably one of my favorite actresses. But again, she's just working at a different level than a lot of other people are in this movie. So casting that I liked, Timothy Chalamet, great.
Yeah.
You know, you need someone who looks young and wispy but can also become a badass, and he worked out. Zendaya, thought she's really good casting for Shani. Unfortunately, she is the weakest actress, or she's the weakest actor, you know, male or female or whatever I want to say. And she has to do quite a lot of work in this movie.
Yeah.
And she's barely on the edge. She gets away with it because she's playing kind of a petulant teenager, and she's a young enough actor that she can play that well just by, like, overacting slightly. So... great. Rebecca Ferguson, actually, maybe she's one of my favorite.
Wow, she's creepy.
She's really good.
Oh my God. Is
from someone who is like the hero in the first movie, who it suddenly goes really dark in the second movie. Like, wait, is this still her?
Ooh, yeah.
Really great. Josh Brolin, fine. Austin Butler as Feyd Rautha, that's the young nephew, that's the younger one who fights at the end.
Yeah.
Thought he was very good.
Yeah.
A little bit too cocky. Florence Pugh, Dave Bautista as Rabban, I thought he was really good. Do you know Dave Bautista? He's, what's his face, from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
I wish that had been played up a bit more in the movie, that he was the fall guy. Like, he was never meant to succeed. And in the movie, they're like, come on, you're not succeeding. And in the book, they're like, we're setting him up to fail.
Yes. I mean, I think it was clear what was happening, but I think it was really great to kind of like get the twist of the other way manipulation of like, we know this guy does bad things, but at the same time, I'm kind of gonna, oh, this guy is being treated really
badly.
Dave
Bautista, Rabban, the Beast Rabban, yes. Yeah, again, like in the book, he's the fall guy. In the book, he's the fall guy, and you're like, oh, right, it would have been much more fun if he hadn't just died. Like, really, like, yeah, you kind of want like a little redemption arc for him, but you're like, oh, but he's just a henchman. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's like, a Harkonnen, but he's just...
come on.
Another nephew there. Lea Seydoux as Lady Margaret Fenring. Now, I thought what was really good in the movie is that she is the lady to a count, Count Fenring. In the book, and it's actually the count who is like the one in charge. Mm. And in the movie, they're like, we don't need these to be two characters. She can just do her job, right? Yes, great. So she does the same things that two characters in the book do, or kind of two characters.
Is that the scientist?
No, it's just another. It's just another person.
Oh,
There's Margaret Fenring and the other Count Fenring. He's just another count. He's just sort of like someone who appears in the book, has a few conversations with the emperor, works out the kind of stuff, talks about the Bene Gesserit.
Right.
But in the book, you're like, yeah, like it's interesting. He's an interesting character and it's good. But in the movie, we're like, we don't need two characters here. This can just be one character.
Sure.
Charlotte Rampling as the Reverend Mother, which I thought was pretty good. Stellan Skarsgård as Vladimir Harkonnen, I thought he was very good.
Mm.
Except that some of his CGI makeup was a bit fuzzy. There's only a few times in the whole movie where I'm like, I could do with some, like, you know, proper makeup rather than some CGI character work here.
Yeah.
But I like how he's, like, always sitting in the bath. I think that's really funny.
Yeah.
Javier Bardem as Stilgar, I think was pretty good. Now, here's the thing. Christopher Walken as the emperor. At the end of the movie, Christopher Walken turns up, or like somewhere in the movie, and I'm like, wait, well, I hope he's going to do a really good job acting. And he hardly does anything in the whole movie. He hardly acts. And it's sort of like, well, Christopher Walken's just in this movie. And I never once believed that he was not just Christopher Walken.
I have no image
the emperor
in my head, and it's very...
I'm now going to click on Christopher Walken. This guy.
Oh, yeah,
he just
turns
up, and it's just like, yeah, it's Christopher Walken turned
up. Yeah, but he felt weak.
Yeah. I mean, he was playing a weak emperor, but I wanted him to do a bit more, and he wasn't given anything to do. And I was like, wait, he's meant to be like a main character. And he's sort of like,
Yeah.
So, it's made a lot clearer that it's actually the Reverend Mother who's running the show here.
Absolutely.
And then there's him here, Suhelia Yakub as Shishakali, a Fremen warrior and Shani's friend, which I thought she was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Again, kind of something to put in for the movie.
Yes.
Now, in the book, there's a character who I was really looking forward to who will play her in the movie. And that is the wife of the warrior that Paul kills at the end of the first movie. He comes back and they're like, well, you killed this warrior, so now you get his wife. And suddenly there's this weird love triangle.
Yes.
And
I remember,
like,
that one.
Wait, who's this? Yeah, actually, maybe. Is
Was she in the movie?
No, she wasn't in the movie. But that's why I thought it was interesting that they introduced this other Fremen woman in there for Shani to have conversations with. You know, to be someone else to be like, oh, this is how, this bounces off here, this bounces off there as well. You know, you need these different kind of stuff. The Fremen. So, yes, you get Jamis is the Fremen killed by Paul in the ritual duel.
Yes.
And then Hera, the wife of Jamis and later servant to Paul, who helped raise Aaliyah among the Fremen.
Of course.
She's like this other, and I was like, oh, there's going to be this love triangle. And then, like, nope. Jamis is kind of written out of the movie. Weirdly, though, at the end of the first movie, he has some flash to the forward. So he has like these things.
Yeah.
And he has someone who's teaching him how to be a Fremen.
Mm. And I thought it was Shami.
No, it was Jamis.
Ah.
It was actually Jamis who I think was it. So I think what they did is after finalizing the cut of the first movie, they probably had this idea that the warrior that Paul killed, which is Jamis, is going to come in and be like a spirit guide to him. Like, I defeated you.
Yeah.
And now, like, I took your memories. And I felt like there was something, again, I'd have to read the Wikipedia page to see, or like some behind the scenes stuff to work out. Like, was it Jamis who was the guy who was guiding him? But again, I didn't need to look into that. But yeah, I think that's kind of, it's probably good that they cut out this whole love triangle kind of thing.
It makes it even more complex.
Yeah, because there's Hera, there's Shani, and then also Princess Irulan turns up. And you're like, wait, so Paul gets like three wives? Is that how it works.
Yeah.
And so I understand why they didn't do all of that. Anyway, this became a lot more book versus movie than I was expecting. I thought I'd just talk about the book. But again, I watched the movie since I read the book. So yes, it's difficult to separate them out.
Yeah.
Well, not difficult.
But I do like it to come up to the conclusion that this is literally like a century book. Like, you can read it over the lifetime,
yeah,
and it changes and you see things different depending on...
Yeah, it's like 60 years old, coming up to 70 years old.
Yeah.
Two major adaptations, various different movies, like huge numbers of spin-off books and other stuff.
Yeah.
Dune is as big in the world of... let's say, I wouldn't say movie world, because of course there's Star Wars and Star Trek, so they're bigger than it. But I'd say Dune is like that next rung down of, you know, of science fiction. There isn't anything bigger than Dune. Yeah. There isn't anything like between Star Trek and Star Wars and then the rest of science fiction culture. Mm. Dune is, I would say, in third place there.
Yeah.
So it just keeps coming up. You know, yes, they're going to keep making it.
Yeah. And also because it is such a huge... cautionary tale of, like, you know how it is with power and people and...
Well, I wouldn't even say caution. But like I say, it's so weird that in the 1960s, they're like, let's deconstruct the myth. Mm. But then tell it subtly enough that people think they're getting one thing and then in the end it's switched out. And you're like, wait a second, I thought Paul was the hero. And you're like, yeah, everybody... you either die young enough to be the hero or you live long enough to become the villain, or whatever the Batman fucking thing is in the Dark Knight.
Yes.
You know, live long enough to become the villain. And you're like, oh, right. So you mean 3 pages before the end of the book, he's the villain. You're like, when he's meant to turn away and not go and not accept the fate. Yeah.
Don't go there. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some really good moments in the, I was really interested because I read the first time I watched the movie, or when I watched Dune Part 1 the first time in like 2021 or whenever it came out, I hadn't read the book recently enough.
Mm.
And then I read the book and then watched the movie like almost immediately. And I was like, wow, there's actually a lot. You know, that first, the first movie,
it's dense.
It's very
dense.
It's so dense. There's so much which is taken directly from the book.
Yeah.
And the second movie obviously departs more from the book, but it's like so many of those scenes where you're like, oh, right, yeah, that scene. Oh, these are the same conversations. Oh, this is the same lines, you know. Switch some stuff around to make things better or worse, or like a bit more time on Caladan. This, you know, he first touches sand, not all the way into the book. He first touches sand, you know, when they go and save the people from the crawler, you know. Mm. The spice trawler or whatever it is. Yeah, so it is... I'm very impressed. Again, my rating of the book is still like 4 stars or whatever. You know, I think in the end, the more times you read it, the more you... I wouldn't say see its flaws, but it just doesn't... Like, there's less new stuff to find. And in this case, I was reading it knowing that I was going to find new things to reflect on.
Yeah.
And I think, the changes that they made for the movie to make it more subtle in some ways in the first movie and then way less subtle in the second movie, I think is the right way to go.
Yeah.
And let's see. Now I'm thinking, do I want to read Dune Messiah? Because I only ever read that, like, I have read it twice, but I've not read it for 20 years, probably.
Okay.
Dune Messiah. So do I want to save it and just watch the movie and go in cold and not actually remember like every single conversation and every plot point?
Well, I will certainly do that.
Yeah. So who knows? Let's go into it. Anything else I want to say? I was going to say I look at my notes. Didn't make any notes because it's Dune and I...
Oh, right.
I can talk about Dune for 52 minutes.
I know that there's a... what did you say? Publication date. No, when the movie comes out, I think there's already a date set. Was it like November next year or something? Mm. When the third Dune movie comes out. So we already know there's like rumors and...
Yeah, no, it was announced that they're doing it. Let's see, box office, critical response, future.
Mm.
Villeneuve is expressing making a third film based on Dune Messiah, noting that the possibility of film depended on the success of Dune Part 2.
Mm.
There's also a TV spin-off series.
Yes, that is true. I heard about that.
In April 2024, it was reported that Villeneuve and Legendary had officially begun development of the third film. It was said it would be the final Dune movie, or Villeneuve's final Dune movie.
Mm-hmm.
It would be good idea for me to make that in Messiah. There's the seeds in the project. If someone wants to do something else afterwards, because they are beautiful books, but they are more difficult to adapt. That's very true. God Emperor of Dune, that's never coming to them. Well, you'd say maybe he's not. They become more and more esoteric, a bit more tricky to adapt. But I'm not closing the door. I'll not do it myself. But it could happen. I guess Aliens. Now that I think about it, let's go. let's go. Star Wars, Star Trek, Aliens, Dune.
Okay.
But yes, still, yeah. There's only been so far, there's only been 3 Dune movies.
I understand that. Yeah. All right. That's good.
Yeah.
And what's the next book that you've read and that was waiting in the queue?
Yeah, let me quickly look over here. Oh, next book that I've read is Earth Abides. I finished it a few days ago.
Yep.
Earth Abides. That even says soon to be a new series on, you know, whatever. It's they're doing an adaptation of that.
Oh, really?
But I've read the book before. Mm-hmm. And we're making the episode, the SFBRP Masterworks list. This must read list.
Yeah.
And it's like the 4th book there, here, Earth Abides. But I'd never actually done a full episode about just that. The episode that's listed here was actually an SFF audio podcast with me and Jesse and other people talking about the book. But I'd never done just an SFBRP book about it.
Have read this book. And
many years
I
ago.
Don't remember that much.
I tell you something. We'll talk about that. And also I want to say, good luck making a good adaptation about this book.
Yeah.
And if you do make it, I think for this to be a good TV series, it's going to have to completely miss the point of the book. But let's get into that as we come up to it. I'm also reading David Zendel's Neverness, which is another possibility to go on the SFBRP must reads list.
Oh, is
which
it?
Which I've read twice before, but I've not read it since starting the SFBRP. But I once listed it as among my top 5 science fiction novels that I'd read.
Okay.
So if once upon a time Luke thought this was one of his top 5 novels, let's give it a go.
See if it still holds up.
Yeah, and also people say, oh, it's a bit like Dune, and now I'm starting reading it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see why people think that. Even though it's completely different. But also I'm like, wow, yes, I understand why people say that.
Cool.
And those are the only books. Oh, yes, and also the next episode. So those are the next books that we'll probably do review.
Yeah.
Our next episode that we record will probably, or maybe, our Christmas special. Even though we're recording this on Christmas Day, our Christmas special was meant to be our Lord of the Rings trilogy marathon.
Yeah,
episode.
Extended edition.
Extended. I remember though. You know when we did the Mission Impossible?
Yeah.
One, we actually at the end of every movie we did about it.
Yeah,
I forgot that
six movies.
I forgot that was what the format was.
Yeah.
And so we didn't talk about the first movie after the first movie. We just finished the second movie.
Yes.
And now my next work trip is in 2 days. Time so
it's just a bit like the plan diverted it a little bit from what's actually happening.
Yeah, because
what is happening is that
gigs.
You're here for like literally 2 days and then
we did this podcast
again. We did. I'm quite glad about that.
All right, so I think what I'm gonna do is not just list this as Dune the book. I think I'm gonna because here, if we go like this, wait a second. We did this episode Dune part 1.
Okay.
June 2022. So I'm just going to call this June part 2.
Yes.
And not do a review. I'm not going to give a rating to the book. It's just going to be the second time we talk about the Dune movies in relation to the book. Except this time I also read the book as well as just watching the 2 movies.
Yep, let's do it.
Let's
Sounds
return
good.
In 4 years' time where we will do June part 3 and maybe I'll read
and you
June
read
Messiah.
The book again.
No, I'll read Dune Messiah
oh, yes, of
and
course.
Then watch the Dune movie.
That makes sense.
In one or two of those orders. So join us for June part 3 in 3 or 4 years time, whenever the next movie comes out. Denis Villeneuve, pretty good at movie making, isn't
he? Oh yeah. The costume design, I'm
costume
very impressed.
Hans Zimmer, really good.
Yeah, there are reasons why these are like top-tier people.
Top-tier people. Yeah, it's one of those things where you just go like, oh yeah, and they bring together, you know, like Star Wars, like, oh, you bring together this editor this, you know, this writer and this
cinematographer.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, it's kind of like unfair to get a team this good together. Like, and they say, when it's June, you can pick any actor you want. And you're like, how about Christopher Walken as the...
Yes, and the music does so much to it.
Very impressed by the movie. Very impressed by the action. There's a few times in the movie where I'm like, the special effects, sand and sand clouds are very, very difficult things to do, you know, compositing where you like
foregrounding.
Yeah, like and, yeah. this is in the foreground, and then this thing is got some smoke in front of it or some dust in front of it, and then there and then there. That really made me think. I saw some stuff in, now we're watching Lord of the Rings, just to talk about that. And that's done with like miniatures. And I'm like, oh, actually, there's sometimes when this stuff happens with miniatures where the dust clouds that come off are like more convincing than CGI or not CGI, but
because
whatever they're doing.
Because your brain knows what it should look like.
That's not to say that all the Lord of the Rings miniatures look the right size. No, a lot of them are miniatures. But I'm just saying the compositing of sand and stuff. And it's sort of like, the movie's called Dune. You could have just done a little bit more work to make the, you know, some sand cloud that's puffing up here look a bit more convincing.
But this is now criticism on highest, highest level.
Yeah, but this is like criticism right on the very edge of everything.
Anyway, we're just about to say, we'll finish up the podcast and now we're starting again.
Yes, yes, that's true. Christopher Walken, completely wasted in this movie. But he just turns up and I'm like, go on, then do the acting, do the Christopher Walken stuff, do the whatever. And he's sort of like, I'm the emperor. And then you're like, that's just me.
Okay. I was impressed by the puffy latex clothes by the Harkonnens.
Oh, a bit about the audiobook. Let's just finish with this. The audiobook, they have at some point like a full cast. So suddenly the different characters will start saying stuff and without attribution. Sort of like, here's Paul saying something. Here's the other person. And it just goes into a conversation. And then for huge parts of the rest of it, nothing like that at all. And I'm like, why are some scenes done in this way? It's like completely baffling to me. But then the main audiobook narrator, he doesn't call them all the time Harkonnens. You know, that's how I was like, Harkonnens.
Yeah.
He calls them the Harkonnens. And the way that he talks about it, I'm like, oh, so they're from Finland then? Because I was like, Mika Hakkinen. He says it like more Mika Hakkinen, like the, what is it, Formula One driver.
Oh, I actually thought like Harkonnen sounds a bit more
I'm just saying, I've
Finnish.
Always heard Atreides, Harkonnen, in my, when I'm reading it in my head, does it? But he calls them the Atreides. Like the Atreides. It's the Atreides and the Harkonnens.
The Harkonnens. Atreides is terrible.
Again, I'm like, no, it's the Atreides, the Harkonnens. Yeah. Because, of course, we're like, I speak English and we put the stress on like that third syllable when in the longer ones. But he's like, no, the Harkonnens. And the Atreides. Yeah. I'm Paul Atreides. And I'm like, you're not Paul Atreides. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, but Atreides sounds a bit more, you know, legendary or Greek or something like that. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I think Atreides would be like how it would be sounding.
Atreides,
more. And I think if you have subtle changes, like if you do Harkonnen, I understand.
But we don't say Odysseus. We say Odysseus. You know, Odysseus. Well, how would you say it?
In German, we say I don't even know
the name. Odysseus.
My mind is blank.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So
in different languages,
say
the stress is
Odyssey.
Yeah.
And what's the guy's name?
Odysseus.
Odysseus.
Yes. Yeah, so it's like the emphasis isn't on the latter. It's emphasis, not emphasis.
Yes.
Or emphasis.
Yes.
Whatever. Anyway, little diversion there that kept on tripping me up in the... And I'm sorry, stop saying Harkonnen. It's Harkonnen, not Harkonnen.
I can get behind Harkonnen.
Mika Harkonnen.
Harkonnen.
From Finland.
The Harkonnens. But it's Atreides.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
We're really wrapping up there.
Yeah, we really
Anything
do.
Else? I've got no other notes.
You can also join in the discussion.
Yeah. Head over to the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com. But this is a movie. It doesn't matter. There's not even going to be
Thanks for the little messages we get there. I really appreciate it. I read them all. I don't answer. I'm sorry.
Follow me on Instagram. Follow Juliana. That's it from us. Thanks a lot for watching and we'll catch you next time. Thanks a lot for listening and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.